Hey everyone, welcome back to the XYZ Experiment Podcast. My name is Luke, I am your Gen Z, and I am joined by Dash and Fee. And today, guys, I'm just going to throw a question straight at you. This is something that I have been thinking about recently. What is something you guys did as a kid that you still do today?
Well, I'm happy to start because I literally did this week. So... as a child, I formed an unhealthy obsession with salt and vinegar chips. Crinkle cut, it had to be. I can't be.
Even down to the crinkle cut.
Yeah, it has to be crinkle cut.
So that's Smith's chips?
Smith's chips.
Smith's chips, yeah.
Are my favourite. I mean, yeah. I will eat the others, but they are my favourite.
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons that I kind of am a bit obsessed with them is that growing up, we weren't allowed them very often. So they were only if friends came over, like they were considered a special treat.
So you'd have them in the house though?
They'd be in the house.
Okay, yeah.
But you weren't allowed to have them.
Yes.
And so then when we did have friends over and then we would have them, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And so I always associated that with then a good time, I guess.
And treat.
And a treat, right? But then when I started studying or when I would be in times of stress, it would almost be like my brain would be like, you need salt and vinegar chips right now.
Yeah.
Because you need to like have something fun in your life. You can't, what's happening around you is not really fun. And so you need salt and vinegar chips because you need something fun.
And so it was a placebo for your anxiety, really?
Well, maybe, maybe. And so I'd start eating them when I was studying. I used to eat them. And only recently one of the nurses at the clinic told me off for this, right? I used to eat them on the way to getting an infusion.
Yeah.
Because it was like my treat to myself, right? Because I was anxious.
But, yeah, it must have been really soothing for you.
Yeah, like, yeah. And it was like, this is the treat, this is my good thing before I get a three-hour infusion of a bloody drug that's going to make me feel crap. The nurse would always say, you would come dehydrated.
Because of the chips, the salt.
Because of the salt. Yeah. And it was always hard to find my vein. And this week I had salt and vinegar chips because I was in the middle of grant writing and I hit 2 p.m. and I was just like, I just need salt and vinegar chips. I've been working since 5:30. I just need salt and vinegar chips to get me through the rest of the afternoon.
I want them now.
Dash, with the eating salt and vinegar chips, is it like a mindful type of eating? Like, are you like eating and being like, yes, salt and vinegar chips, or is it kind of like a stress getting handfuls and just shoving them to your mouth?
I will get a packet of salt and vinegar chips if I'm not on the go. So if I'm like traveling somewhere and I'm eating them, then that's a different thing. But if I'm at home, I will then allocate out some into a bowl and take it to where I'm sitting and I'll try and eat them slowly and enjoy them. And then I'll think, the packet's open. So I'll just go back and have some more. I am very hard trying to break this habit because it's not a good one, and salt and vinegar chips are actually not good for your blood sugar.
Because, you know, they're one of the, not salt and vinegar chips.
But just chips in general.
Chips in general are a tooth decay.
Yes.
Because like, there's so much sugar in them.
And I always brush my teeth after it.
Yeah, because people always, like patients always say to me, oh, I only like savoury and I only eat chips. And I think, yeah, they've got more sugar than a lot of chocolate.
Yeah, it's very high in sugar. But that's probably one of the habits, among others, which we can come back to. But that's probably the first one I'll share with you.
It's funny, isn't it, how emotional we... Because I would call that emotional eating myself.
Yeah, 100%.
Like the... It gives you comfort and gives you like a... I don't know, a boost or...
But I would choose that over chocolate.
Yeah, but that's your your comfort food. That's why.
Yeah, it's my comfort food.
It's your comfort food, yeah. Like my comfort food all my life... I gave it up a number of years ago, was Milo.
Yeah.
I couldn't, like, Milo, I say to people, Milo got me through university.
Yeah.
I say that all the time. Like, and I'd be sitting in my room and mum and dad would come and tap on the door and go, do you want a Milo? You know, and then they'd bring me in a hot Milo, always a hot Milo, you know, and there's a very specific way I liked it to be made. And I did that for years and years and years until I became a diabetic and I'm like, I have to cold turkey give
Stop.
Up Milo.
Yeah.
And then the weird thing was is I'd go to friends' places and they'd go, they don't drink any Milo, and they would say, oh, I'll make you a Milo, and they would have the Milo just for me, you know.
So would
and
you
I'd
drink
go,
it then?
No, I haven't had a, because I knew if I went back, I'd go back to Milo. And so I haven't had a Milo now. I know I gave it up on February 18, 2011 is when I gave Milo up.
Yeah.
I actually know the date. And I remember going to a friend's place a couple of years later, and she goes to me, "Oh, do you want a Milo?" And I'm going, "No." And she goes, "This bloody Milo I've bought you." And she brings this little tin out. She goes, "It's gone all hard, and I only ever had it for you." Just getting angry at me that I wasn't having Milo anymore, you know. But that was my great comfort. That's why I understand the salt and vinegar chips, you know. Just, but I sometimes I think I'd love a Milo. I go, no. Anyway, sorry.
Anyway. But Luke, what's yours? What did you do?
What I did that I still do, and it's two things, and they're kind of, they go hand in hand, is that I pace constantly and I talk to myself constantly. Every single day there is just allocated time where I'm just gonna get up and just start running, like not running, walking in like laps and talking to myself.
Do you know when it started? Like what started it? Can you remember?
I wonder if it was just as a kid, just a way that I processed things was I just like if I was feeling anxious or because it's something that happens not just like it's like an anxious response. When I'm excited, when I'm stimulated by things as well, when I'm reading a really good book or watching a movie, I'll stop reading it to get up and pace and start talking out loud about what I'm doing. I really don't watch even I'll probably disconnect a little bit when I'm at the cinema to think, but when I'm watching a movie at home, a TV show at home, I'm doing anything at home, I will pause the movie to get up and just start pacing and talking out loud.
And you're processing and what you're watching? Like
processing what I'm watching, talking through what I've seen and not talking what I'm thinking about it.
No.
And my family home is quite like an old rickety home. And my bedroom is above the kitchen.
Oh, yeah.
And there are so many times where I get texts from my parents or my sister to be like, "Can you quiet down?" And I'm thinking, I'm not doing anything. And it's because I'm pacing so aggressively they can hear the footsteps.
Wow.
So can you talk out loud without pacing? Like, do they always have to go hand in hand?
I have to. It's interesting because, the movement now, it almost like stimulates the reflection in a way.
Oh.
It's the same with a habit that I've always had since a kid is that I rarely will sit and listen to music.
Oh.
The only time that I'll listen to music is when I'm like walking.
When you're moving.
And so I'm often moving just so like it's like, oh, I want to listen to some music. I'm going to go for a walk so I can listen to music.
Wow. Do you know something really interesting you just said is that my mum, my parents or my sister will text me to stop pacing.
Yeah.
And they'll often tell me they can hear me. I think
my parents would just scream up the staircase. Stop.
Or they'd come to your door.
Yeah. They could very well have been screaming at me and I've just been caught up in my own circuit.
That is so interesting. So do you do this in front of people? Like, not your family, but like friends. Like, would you get up and pace and talk to yourself out loud?
Yeah, I've become some like friends with some people in my cohort recently in the last couple of weeks, and I'll go into their office and like talk to them, and I'll get up while we're talking, and I'll start moving around their office, and they'll be like, "Do you have somewhere to go, or are you okay?" And I was like, "Yeah, why?" And they're like, "You just can't stop moving," and I was like, "Yeah, just is what it is."
So when you're moving, are you moving just up and down, up and down, up and down, or are you doing a circle? What are you doing?
Honestly, the actual circuit itself doesn't matter. Yep. I just am just in motion, I think.
Okay.
In motion. And when you're talking, are you talking out loud or are you talking in your head?
I'm talking out loud.
Yeah, okay.
You are such a weirdo.
I can only imagine what it would look like me in my 100%. Bedroom.
We haven't seen him do it in the studio yet.
No, you haven't done it in the podcast studio, probably because you're tied to the headphones, to the equipment.
There's not much movement you can do when you've got the podcasting equipment on. But
yeah. But I'm just thinking if I saw you do that, right, like if you were at uni and I suddenly saw a young man pacing up and down, muttering to themselves, I'd be like, are they okay?
Oh, would you say? Yep. I would think they've got their ear pods in and they were talking
to someone. No, I'd check for that first. But if they didn't have that, I'd be like, are they okay?
I don't know.
Have people asked you that? Well, I guess that your friends just did.
Yeah, no. Again, maybe when I'm in public, it's more pacing and thinking.
Yeah.
But in my home. I'm that really just constantly talking to myself. Or like when I'm learning something, like I'm studying, I'll stop reviewing the content and I'll just start doing like a, like almost like I'm a lecturer and actually like explain it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very good way of learning though.
Yeah, it's, I think it's a real, like I'm not, I don't feel any type of way about the fact that I do this because I actually think it really helps me with processing everything, whether it be again, difficult emotions or things that I'm learning. I think it like has a lot of utility, but I just notice that sometimes it's generalized now to behaviors in social contexts as well. And sometimes I can see people seeing it. Or like, I remember I've got one vivid memory in childhood where it was like a Christmas Eve dinner party and I was really nervous. And we had like a family room where we would all like play Xbox, me and all of my cousins. And I was so nervous for some reason. I can't remember why. Maybe I had to say like a speech or something for like some reason. But I was just pacing up and down one side of the room. And I remember my family being like, are you okay? And then I just remember one of my family members being like, don't worry, he does that all the time. That's just him.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, they knew.
Yeah.
Were you surprised that they sort of knew, going, don't worry, it's just normal?
Yeah, and I was just like, oh, thanks, and just kept going.
Yeah.
So it's always stuff that's happening in the present. Like, do you ever pace and talk out loud things that are memories from your past?
I'm never going that far back.
Yeah.
With pacing, it often is just what's in the forefront.
Mm.
Do you do more, less, or the same now as an adult?
I think it's, I would say more just because I walk now. I reckon I do on average 2 walks a day.
Yeah.
Possibly 3.
Wow.
And that is dictated by whether or not I feel like I have things I want to talk out mm-hmm. or like I mm-hmm. want to go listen to music, I think.
Because a lot of people, you know, when you're saying like you're studying and then you get out and you talk about it as a lecturer, that almost to me is like someone might scribble it on a pad, you know what I mean, and write it all out. It probably means the type of learner that you are, you know. Like some people will have that conversation but write that conversation, wouldn't they? Whereas Luke is doing it verbally.
But I'm like Luke. So I wrote most of my PhD chapters by walking around the block talking to a voice recorder.
Yeah.
To get the argument right.
Yeah.
And then I could come back and write it. Whereas in writing it first off didn't always work. So I'm more of a verbal processor. And when I became a lecturer, I would practice out loud.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think it's a little bit like protective of other habits as well, because what it means is that when I'm studying, I don't as often when I like need a break or like something's come into my mind, I don't often go on my phone and like go on social media. Not, I don't really have many social media accounts to begin with, but instead of that, I do a little bit of work. I get up, pace, talk to myself, come back, work, pace, talk to myself until the task is done.
Interesting.
So it means that I'm only really like kind of being exposed to and like encoding information without then having that those distractions like pop up or feel necessary.
So you're staying in the present the whole time, really.
And it's the movement as much as the talking.
I might recommend this approach, but I will say to people, make sure you don't do it in front of other people randomly.
Yes, I would. I'd also second that.
Only because I do think it would alarm some people. But Fiona, what is your childhood and practice that is also in adulthood? Well, you talked about Milo.
Mine's not as deep as you guys. When I was...
I don't think salt and vinegar chips are deep.
It's a comfort. It's an emotion. Mine doesn't have any emotion behind it. Mine is silly. So when I was driving to university, I used to be part of a carpool. There was 3 of us and it was one man and another girl. And we would drive... university drive, and we'd be going over train tracks to get to the university. And one day when the man was driving the car, he said, oh, did you know it's good luck to lift your feet when you go over train tracks, right? So we started this habit, and my friend will really laugh when she hears this. And every time we come up to a train track, one of us, whoever was driving, because we'd share the driving, would scream out, feet up, and we would all lift our feet off the ground, and we'd all be in hysterics about it. Like every single time we'd laugh and laugh and laugh. And by the time we get to university, we're always in very good mood about it. And still to this day, if I'm going over a train track or sometimes like a really big tram track, I still have that thought in my head, feet up, and I will take some pressure off my feet if I'm driving. If I'm not driving, I will fully lift my feet off the floor of the car. So wow. If my husband's driving and I'm the passenger and
do
I go...
Do you yell feet
no,
up?
No, but in my head, all I can hear is feet up and I'll lift my feet still. For good luck, I'll lift my feet still.
Have you ever Googled this to see if it's an actual thing?
No. It's just... Back then there was no Google. But it's just something that probably... I know this sounds really funny and I don't believe I'll have bad luck if I don't, but it still just gives me great delight. Does that make sense? Like it's
that's
what
I was
such a beautiful memory for me, you know, that we would do that. And like I'm thinking now, I'm thinking like we would scream it out. Like just, you can imagine a bunch of 17-year-olds, you know, just doing that sort of silly thing. It was really hysterical to us at the time. When I first moved to Melbourne, there's so many tracks everywhere compared to Perth. I had to make this deal that I wouldn't do it on tram tracks anymore, just the train tracks, because otherwise it would just get ridiculous with how many tracks that you're
and
going
now
over.
They've done that big project to put the train tracks above ground,
yes.
So there's not as many of them.
But I would not go over a train track without lifting my feet. Not unsafely. As I said, if I'm driving, I just take some pressure off my feet. But if I'm a passenger, those feet come up.
It's like I'm putting quotation marks a superstition, but it's almost like a little like ritual. And I was going to ask if like when you do it and you catch, like, 'cause you catch yourself doing it, if it just sparks a little bit of joy when you do it.
Yeah, it's all it is. So like, as I said, I don't think I'm going to have a bad day or anything like that. But it is like that, isn't it? Like, you know, don't walk under a ladder. Don't walk by black. You know what I mean? Oh, no, I've seen a black cat on a Friday. I'm thinking all these stupid things. It's not like I think I'm going to have any bad luck, but it's just, it just gives me maybe, I don't know if I've even shared it with my husband, but maybe it just gives me this little laughter in my day. Maybe that's all
but
it is.
But early on, I do wonder whether or not you guys had good things happen after that event.
Probably. But, you know, even like if I'm walking to work or something like that, I will avoid standing on the train track or the tram track, I should say.
Yeah.
I will look at my feet and I will put my feet between the tracks and make sure I don't touch the metal of it.
Yeah, I never stand on them. But you know what? After I submitted my PhD, I went for a whole 12 months where I wouldn't stand on the cracks of the pavement.
Oh, yeah. I get that sometimes.
And I've for some reason had this psychological block against doing that. Like I was like, and then I was like, this is getting like unhealthy.
Weird.
There's nothing to this. And so then I deliberately stood on all the cracks.
I sometimes wonder if it's, if you're a person who is high achieving, okay, so you're a high achiever and you go, and then that's taking back a little bit of control when things feel like they're out of control.
Oh, 100%.
I just wonder
so
if that's what it is. I can control that, so I'll just control that. And then it's good that you noticed it and went, no, actually.
This is odd.
Yeah, this is, I got to give this up, you know. So that's where you're healthy. Well, that's I'm not the psychologist, but that's where I think, you know. But
there's
I can see how it happens.
There's self-awareness enough. Yeah. To do that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I do think it's just interesting. I've never heard of that before.
Oh, really?
The whole lift your
feet up.
Yeah, well, that was old.
That's why I was like, have you checked this?
Tony did it. Tony told us that. And then my other habit is a good one. It's that I cannot go to sleep without reading. I cannot sleep without reading. And it doesn't matter how early or late it is. And, in fact, if it's early, I read for hours. But if it's late, not so much. And I will literally not stop reading until I can no longer comprehend what I'm reading on that page. Like, and that's when I know I'm done. So I'll be reading and reading and reading. And then all of a sudden I realise I'm drifting off or I'm thinking, what did I just read? What did I just read? And then I think, oh, now's the time to switch it off. So I don't have a set time on my clock or anything. It's literally the reading tells me my brain is ready to shut down. Turn it off. And then so sometimes when I pick the book up the next day, you know, to go to bed, I think I can't remember that last page and I have to go back a page because I've that's when I was drifting. It's very rare for me to wake up and I've fallen asleep with a book. Like that doesn't happen. I tend to catch myself in time. But, yeah, that's almost like my cue that now I can go to sleep. And whether that's at 10 p.m., 1 a.m., 4 a.m., doesn't matter. I just – I just have to do that. I've done that ever since I was little, and it hasn't changed at all, like at all.
Fee, do you check, so when you're reading, do you check the time at all, or you're just like,
nah,
I will know when it's time
I
to go to
I will know when it's time to go to sleep, yeah. So I don't check. I know what time I've gone to bed. It might be 10 o'clock or something, or sometimes later, and then I just read. The other night I made a big mistake. I started reading a book which I'm rereading, and then all of a sudden I thought, I'm not really getting that tired, and it was literally 1:30 in the morning. I thought, oh, shit. I knew I'd been reading for quite a while, and I wasn't working the next day, so it was okay. But it was like I just got so lost in the book that I just lost track of time, literally.
Well, I used to be like that.
Yeah.
And then I had too many instances where I dropped the book on my head.
Oh, yeah. Like, my mum does that all the time.
All the time, because I have found it harder and harder to hold books.
Yes.
I think because we're that generation that holds phones.
Yeah.
We don't have almost the dexterity to hold a book open in the same way. And like, particularly if I'm like trying to lie down and start to drift off, so many times I've hit myself in the head.
Wow.
Yeah, with a book falling on my head. Or peduncle. So then we just kind of stopped.
I could fall asleep reading as well, and I would often wake myself up as a kid because I would start. I'm a big roller in sleep, and I'd roll over, and the book would fall off and slam. It would be make that. It'd have this perfect surface area where it just make a big slapping sound, and it would wake me and often my family up.
Oh wow!
There you go.
Yeah.
You see, I never fall asleep reading a book.
Again, going back to texting, I'd get texts from my dad being like, "Are you okay?" And I'd be like, "It wasn't me. It was the book."
Yeah, worried you'd fallen out of bed. Yeah, well, that seems to be my cue when I'm ready to go to sleep. It just, you know, read, and then my cue is your brain's ready. And then literally when I put the book down, I'm normally asleep within minutes. Minutes.
Well, there is a sleep test that they do, which is literally you're holding a spoon with a tray right next to your bed. Have you heard of this one?
No.
And so then you start to fall asleep. Take note of the time, and then when you fall asleep, you lose grip of the spoon, so it clangs, and then it wakes you up, and you look at the time, and you see how much time has passed. And if you're under 5 minutes, it means you're sleep deprived, and you have sleep debt.
Yeah.
And so I think that's because that's the phase of life I'm at the moment. Like when I go to bed now, I'm like literally falling asleep pretty quickly, and so it was getting harder to read a book before bed because I was constantly dropping it on my head because it would be within a couple of minutes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I'd be like, "How? I'm only a page in or two pages in and I'm like already dropping this book on my head."
I have to think about that because sometimes I'll only read a couple of pages. I think, no, I'm ready to go now. Like, but then there's other times that I can read 100 pages.
So they must be the days that you are not as sleep deprived.
Yeah, it must be.
Or you've had Milo. No, you don't have Milo.
I don't have
anymore.
Milo anymore. Although I still love a hot drink. Just that comfort in your belly. I just think so many childhood habits and habits of comfort.
Yeah.
I really believe
I
that.
Think
that
so.
The habits of comfort, the habits of treating anxiety, the habits of, I know this is giving me a good feeling at the moment. I mean, the habits we've talked about, there is some self-destructive habits,
100%.
You know, as well. But, yeah.
This is why I can't have salt and vinegar chips in the house anymore.
I know what I'm going to buy Dash for her birthday present now.
Because I often then we're like, oh,
gotta go to Costco.
I can't be bothered going to the store to get it.
And then whenever she comes over, I have to make sure I've got some.
No. Don't. You'll make this habit very hard to break.
You don't have to break it. You don't have to break
but
it.
But next time
it's
you're
not
in
out
the
of control.
Next time you're in the studio, Luke, I am so curious as to whether or not you'd want to. Maybe we should get him a standing, like, walking mic.
Yeah, we could do that.
That'll be a sight.
We'll video it.
Yeah. It's Luke pacing.
Hi everyone, it's Dash. Thanks for taking the time to listen to the XYZ Experiment podcast, and don't forget to leave a rating and a review. If you've enjoyed our show and like what you're hearing, tell all your friends and family and hit that subscribe button. If you want to hear our updates and know when episodes drop, follow us on Instagram at the XYZ Experiment for all the latest updates and news. And our original music was composed and performed by the amazing Luke Champion.